As the summer progressed, so did our game. We polished and perfected it, added dialogue and plot, until we had manufactured a small play upon which we rang changes every day. Dill was a villain's villain. He could get into any character part assigned him, and appear tall if height was part of the devilry required. He was as good as his worst performance. His worst performance was gothic. I reluctantly played assorted ladies who entered the script. I never thought it as much fun as Tarzan, and I played that summer with more than vague anxiety, despite Jim's assurances that Boo Radley was dead and nothing would get me, with him and Calpurnia there in the daytime and Atticus home at night. Jim was a born hero. It was a melancholy little drama, woven from bits and scraps of gossip and neighborhood legend. Mrs. Radley had been beautiful until she married Mr. Radley and lost all her money. She also lost most of her teeth, her hair, and her right forefinger. Dill's contribution. Boo bit it off one night when he couldn't find any cats and squirrels to eat. She sat in the living room and cried most of the time, while Boo slowly whittled away all the furniture in the house. The three of us were the boys who got into trouble. I was the probate judge, for a change. Dill led Jim away and crammed him beneath the steps, poking him with the brush broom. Jim would reappear as needed in the shapes of the sheriff, assorted townsfolk, and Miss Stephanie Crawford, who had more to say about the Radleys than anybody in Macomb. When it was time to play Boo's big scene, Jim would sneak into the house, steal the scissors from the sewing machine drawer when Calpurnia's back was turned, then sit in the swing and cut up newspapers. Dill would walk by, cough at Jim, and Jim would fake a plunge into Dill's thigh. From where I stood, it looked real. When Mr. Nathan Radley passed us on his daily trip to town, we would stand still and silent until he was out of sight, then wonder what he would do to us if he suspected. Our activities halted when any of the neighbors appeared, and once I saw Miss Maudie Atkinson staring across the street at us, her hedge clippers poised in midair. One day we were so busily playing Chapter 25, Book 2 of One Man's Family, we did not see Atticus standing on the sidewalk looking at us, slapping a rolled magazine against his knee. The sun said 12 noon. "What are you all playing?" he asked. "Nothing," said Jim. Jim's evasion told me our game was a secret, so I kept quiet. "What are you doing with those scissors, then? Why are you tearing up that newspaper? If it's today's, I'll tan you." "Nothing."
"Nothing what?"
said Atticus.
"Nothing, sir."
"Give me those scissors," Atticus said. "They're no things to play with."
"Does this, by any chance, have anything to do with the Radleys?"
"No, sir," said Jim, reddening. "I hope it doesn't," he said shortly, and went inside the house.
"Jim, shut up. He's gone in the living room. He can hear us in there."
Safely in the yard, Dill asked Jim if we could play any more.
"I don't know. Atticus didn't say we couldn't."
"Jim," I said, "I think Atticus knows it anyway."
"No, he don't. If he did, he'd say he did."
I was not so sure, but Jim told me I was being a girl, that girls always imagine things. That's why other people hated them so, and if I started behaving like one, I could just go off and find some to play with.
"All right. You just keep it up then," I said. "You'll find out."
Atticus's arrival was the second reason I wanted to quit the game. The first reason happened the day I rolled into the Radley front yard. Through all the head shaking, quelling of nausea,
and Jim yelling, I had heard another sound, so low I could not have heard it from the sidewalk. Someone inside the house was laughing.